You're listening to continuing coverage of the Rust shooting trial against Alec Baldwin from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now back to the courtroom.
Let us argue your motion.
Your Honor, just very briefly, first, given the nature of this, can Corporal Hancock step out of the room?
Oh, yes.
That's okay. I'm intending to take testimony from her. She can step out before I do that.
Sure.
One thing that I just want to alert the court to, and I'm going to bring in a photograph that somebody sent to my office, and I'll come up to the lectern if that's okay.
Yes, I would think you would argue at the lectern.
Well, this is just a side issue that I've asked Mr. Nickus to address the court on the motion.
Okay,
this is
fine.
Just a quick, and if it takes out of our time, it does. But I get many sort of inbound emails that I don't obviously read everyone or take everyone seriously, but I got one last night that indicated that the cameras are catching Ms. Morrissey signaling witnesses while they're on the witness stand. And,
Did you look to see if that was true?
I was sent a photograph that concerned me. And I felt obligated, and like I said to the court, I try to not make these issues. This is a high-pressure case. I've been in many. There have been more issues in this case than I have ever seen in all of those cases combined. And so I'm sort of at a loss but to bring it to the court's attention. So I've asked them to print me the photograph that was sent to me. I can't just continue to give the benefit of the doubt on every single thing that's occurred in this case. I just can't. And so I'll be turning that into the court. And I would just say, you know, at every turn of this, right, it's from the original case, it was, you know, I understand and very much respect the court's rulings on everything, frankly. You know, the grand jury, you know, survived, you know, and there's no remedy. I get that. And you know, they destroyed the gun and we have that hearing and there's no remedy, and I get that. And it's just at a certain point, and the Brady disclosure.
I did give you a remedy, but okay.
Well, I
didn't give you the remedy you wanted, but yes.
Fair enough. One might say not a remedy given all of the circumstances that has a meaningful impact at this trial. And so, and then we had the Brady disclosures, and I could keep going, and I'm not going to because we have limited time. Mm-hmm. But there's just never been any. It's just, I don't know how much of it can happen with it.
Okay, let's do this. Where's the picture?
I'm having somebody print it.
Okay. All right, I am aware of what you're saying, but first I have to see the picture, okay? Now, let's go to the arguments of this.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and then you can, you know, show me what you're talking about. And I did get it, so thank you.
You're welcome, Your Honor. Since we did submit the written briefing, I will try to be brief. But I think it'd be helpful to build out some of the facts so Your Honor has the chronology of how this happened and has the factual pieces to understand the severity of what's happened.
Okay.
So on November 1st, 2021, shortly after the Rust incident, Seth Kenny's on the...
Just one moment. I need Faith to get me my notebook.
Of course.
My notebook. I brought it up yesterday. It might even be in my computer bag. Okay. I'm going to go ahead. I'll take notes on this. All right, go ahead.
May I proceed, Your Honor?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Thank you. So November 1st, 2021, Seth Kenny is on a phone call with Corporal Hancock. At that point, we've heard about Seth Kenny's involvement in this, his effort to pry into what's going on with the prop card and the bullets. And so on that phone call, he's telling Corporal Hancock, then Detective Hancock, that he believes he knows where the live bullet came from. He dials in a guy named Teske, who we heard about yesterday in testimony. Teske gets on the line and Seth says, tell Detective Hancock what you know. And he says, well, Fel Reed dropped off a batch of live ammunition at my business because I have a safer place to store it. And after that, Fel shows up, grabs some of the live ammunition and leaves some behind. And that's what I know. And Seth says, well, that could be from the same batch that killed Helena Hutchins. Could be a match. He says, and it's Thel Reed, and it's Hannah Gutierrez Reed. That's the one who's responsible here. Pushing it off on Gutierrez Reed as the source of the live ammunition, just as the state has done in this case. He says, thank you very much. He gets off the phone. Teske says, I'll take a picture. I'm not in front of my computer, not in front of my ammunition. I'll send it in an hour. He sends a picture of four bullets. Ms. Morrissey is going to hold that up to you. and say, these are the four bullets you knew about this. That was from 2021. Detective Hancock does not preserve the other live ammunition that's at Teske's property, even though he told her this could be from the live ammunition batch that matches the bullet that killed Helena Hutchins. 2 years later, November 2nd, 2023, there's a PTI of Teske. Ms. Morrissey's asking questions, and she starts probing further into the live ammunition that Teske had previously said was given to him by Thel Reed. And she says, do you still have some of that ammunition? He says, well, some of it, but I've been out shooting it over the last 2 years because Detective Hancock did not preserve it over that time period. Ms. Morrissey probes further. Where'd it come from? Tell me your story. He says, well, Thel dropped it off. He then picked some up and he went with Seth Kenney to the 1883 Yellowstone movie where he was teaching people how to shoot with that live ammunition. He then went to another movie with Seth Kenney, teaching people how to shoot with that live ammunition. And Seth Kenney then took a green ammo can with that live ammunition in it and brought it home with him. He says that could be the live ammunition from that green ammo can that killed Helena Hutchins. Ms. Morrissey says, I want you to preserve that. And do you think there's any evidence that this was sabotage? And he says, well, actually, Seth Kenney called me while Rust was shooting, telling me he wanted to get Hannah Gutierrez-Reed fired. But he didn't know how to do it because he was concerned about upsetting Thel Reed, significant armor in the business, as Your Honor knows. And so he says, I don't have evidence that there was sabotage, but that's what I know, and I still have this ammunition. As we know, Sarah Zachary, the one who threw the live bullets away, or bullets away, we don't know, live or not, threw bullets away after the incident on Russ, admitted that, was on set, texting with Seth Kenney, angry with Hannah, on the license, excuse me, the ATF report for the Pieta that was involved in this accident. She was on set. They were close. We know that. And so Ms. Morrissey says, you hold on to that evidence and I'll come get it, in essence. She never does. November 2023. Fast forward to March 6, 2024. The end of Hannah Gutierrez-Reed's trial. Teske's in Santa Fe, sees what happens, shows up at the sheriff's office, as we heard from Ms. Popple, and delivers that live ammunition that Hancock had not preserved, that Ms. Morrissey had not collected, that he believed could be from the same batch, from that same green ammo can that we care about, that matched the bullet that killed Helena Hutchins. We heard, Your Honor, what Ms. Popple did with it. They buried it. I'd like to say charitably that it was under the pile of the 5501 information that they didn't disclose, but that's even too charitable because they put it under a different case with a different number. We asked March 26, we want all of the ammunition from the Rust set that you've collected. April 16th, we show up for that viewing. We want all the live ammunition from the Rust set that you collected. It's not there. After Teske had turned it in, after Ms. Popple had created the report, the supplemental report she said she created when she took this in and did not disclose to us, it was not there. Now, Your Honor, we don't know if it's the live ammunition match or not. But what we do know is the state had it. It's disclosable under Giglio. It's disclosable under 5501. And there's a case on point, Your Honor, State versus Allison, where a criminal defendant had been charged with conspiracy, aggravated assault, dishonest related crimes, and he had an arrest record in the prosecution's possession. He had a statement and an arrest record. It was not disclosed under 5501. The criminal defendant shows up at trial and testifies, he's a great guy, honest, no criminal record. The prosecution whips out his arrest record and his statement, disclosable under 5501, which it never disclosed, and said, not true. Court breaks. Defendant says, you didn't disclose that under 5501. And the prosecution says, who cares? He's up on the stand lying. This would not have been favorable to him at all. And so, judge, I want a continuance. Give them a continuance. That's their remedy. Come back tomorrow. I'll disclose everything. I'll make it all right. And then we'll continue. Trial court says, fine, I'll give you that continuance. Limited remedy. You'll have all the information. Do with it what you will. If it's negative, fine. If it's not, that's for you to use at trial. He's convicted. It gets appealed. Ends up in the Supreme Court of New Mexico. That decision was reversed. A continuance is not adequate in those circumstances. They're in the middle of trial. The defendant would have done things differently. The defendant would have opened differently, would have asked questions differently. Too much about where the source, in this case, of the live bullet came in before this was presented at trial. The court said, it doesn't matter if the defendant knew or should have known of it. What we're talking about here is not the defendant's knowledge, not whether it matches, not whether his criminal arrest record would have hurt him or not. We're talking about the conduct of the prosecution. And that's exactly what we're talking about here, Your Honor. We're talking about a prosecution that didn't preserve those bullets, that didn't collect them at all, that didn't turn them over, that we already have a 5501 culpability finding with respect to the last set of information, And Your Honor, the bottom line is we've got 5501 violation, culpability. We don't need to show bad faith. We've got a Brady violation. We've got a Giglio violation. Your Honor, this is critical evidence in the case that was never disclosed to us. You heard Ms. Morrissey say, I'm going to have Detective Hancock come in and testify. We could have Ms. Popple testify. They could say it doesn't match, et cetera, et cetera. It does not matter. It did not matter in Allison. We were entitled to it. Continuance is not a sufficient remedy. This case should be dismissed, Your Honor. This is over and over and over and over again. And Your Honor, you've given them a fair chance. You said, grand jury, as Mr. Spiro said, you said, I'm gonna give you a remedy on Trumbetta. I'm gonna limit it. I'm gonna give you your remedy. You've given them more than enough opportunities, Your Honor. This is not the first time. It's not the second time. It's not even the third time. It's time for this case to be dismissed, Your Honor. That's what Brady requires. That's what Giglio requires. That's what 5501 requires. As Your Honor knows, we've got remedies in the alternative, but this is the one that's right for this moment. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Ms. Morrissey.
I need to use the monitor.
Your Honor, there have been absolutely no violations of our obligations as prosecutors. I want to walk you through everything that has occurred in this regard, everything that these defense attorneys knew well before today, and everything that was also disclosed to Ms. Gutierrez's counsel. So what you can see from the transcript of Mr. Teske's interview during the Gutierrez case prior to her trial is that Mr. Teske is Thel Reed's close friend, and Mr. Teske stores Mr. Reed's ammunition. And the reason that he stores it for Mr. Reed is because Mr. Reed lives in a single wide mobile home that doesn't have a lot of security, and because he's a professional armorer, he has a bunch of guns and ammunition. Mr. Teske is a retired police officer who has a whole bunch of security at his property. So Thel Reed has 300 rounds of live 45 caliber ammunition. And he and Seth Kinney are hired by the producers for the show 1883. Everything that I want you to know, on Your Honor, everything that I'm telling the court, Mr. Bowles has this information, and these people have this information. So nothing I'm telling the court is new. So they get hired on this to do what's called a cowboy training on the set of 1883. So the cowboy training is where gun experts, that being Thel Reed and Seth Kinney, take the actors to shoot real guns with real ammunition, so that they have a better idea of the recoil and how the gun is actually supposed to look, and to help them with their acting techniques. In fact, the fact that production companies do this was actually something that Mr. Baldwin pointed out to Detective Hancock during his interview. He himself has done this with a production company. So when they're through with the cowboy training camp in Texas, they've got some rounds left over. And Seth Kinney says, I'm gonna take these. And Thel Reed lets him take them. So, and let me back up. When they originally went to the cowboy training camp in Texas, they didn't take all of Thel's ammunition. They took a certain amount of it, and Thel left some in Troy Teske's garage. All of this ammunition came from the same place. This was all from basically the same batch of ammunition that Thel Reed had, that he got from a manufacturer, from an ammunition manufacturer in Kingman, Arizona, named Joe Swanson. So they take 300 of his rounds, they go do the cowboy training camp. Seth Kinney then takes the leftover rounds back to PDQ. So then what happens is Mr. Bowles begins to tell Detective Hancock, hey, you need to go execute a search warrant at PDQ because there's this green ammo can that Seth Kinney took after the 1883 training camp. Hancock, to her credit, takes Mr. Bowles at his word. She gets a search warrant. She goes to PDQ. What Mr. Bowles said would be there was there, and you've seen pictures of it. There's a green ammo can. Says 1883 live ammunition. They take it. They send it to the FBI for testing. Not only does it not look like the live rounds from Rust, but it has a different chemical composition. So at that point in time, Hancock has kind of realized, I think, that she's being led down this path by Mr. Bowles that's coming from Thel Reed. Thel Reed is trying to slough everything off on Seth Kinney. So I want to show you, when Seth Kinney is with Detective Hancock, what Mr. Nickus was referring to, he reaches out to Teske, because he's there with Hancock, and he says, hey, send me a photo of the live rounds that you have left over, because I'm giving her the live rounds from my green can. I think he just gave her some of them. They hadn't executed the search warrant at that point in time. Teske says, okay, and he sends to Seth Kinney, you can see November 1st, he sends him that photograph of the live rounds that are in his possession. When you look at that photograph, and I'll blow it up for you, you can tell these are not similar to the live rounds that were found on the set of Rust. Detective Hancock gets this information from Mr. Kinney. Ultimately, though, still goes ahead and executes her search warrant, as she should. I come into this case, I look at the ammunition that was taken from PDQ, I understand from the witnesses that the ammunition was sourced originally from Thel Reed. It was sourced from Hannah's dad. It's not a match. Not only is it not a match when you look at it, it's not a match when you send it to the FBI and you ask them to conduct chemical testing. So this is a wild goose chase. This has no evidentiary value whatsoever. This is simply a man trying to protect his daughter, and he's doing it by providing information that doesn't even match. He's trying to provide evidence that doesn't even match the evidence that was found at the scene. So then let's cut to November of 2023. We do a pretrial interview of Mr. Teske. Let me back up. Detective Hancock reached out when she got this photograph. She reached out to Mr. Teske, and she'll testify to this. If you want her to testify under oath, I'm happy to have her do it. She reached out to Mr. Teske and she said, hey, you know, because you appear to be cooperative, can you just package that stuff up and mail it to me? Because he's in Arizona. He's not here in New Mexico. And he never does. He never sends it to her. She doesn't pursue it because on its face, it's not the same ammunition. Let's cut to November 2023. We're doing the pretrial interview of Troy Teske, where he talks about the ammunition and he talks about what he knows, what information he has about the relevance of this ammunition. What's also very important, and I can have under oath testimony to this fact also, this pretrial interview that was done over Zoom was, well, Mr. Bowles was there, so this was never kept from Gutierrez's lawyers. It was her lawyers that were bringing it to us, so there was no issue there. The jury was completely misled yesterday. So this pretrial interview that takes place in November of 2023 is uploaded to our discovery server. And when it's uploaded to the server, Mr. Baldwin hasn't been indicted yet. When he is ultimately indicted, everything that is on that server is taken and it's put on a hard drive, and it's sent, I believe, to Ms. Clark, who isn't here right now. And certainly Mr. James is happy to testify that it was uploaded to the server, that he downloaded it onto that hard drive, and he provided it to Mr. Baldwin's counsel. So the jury was misled again yesterday when Mr. Spiro indicated, we had no idea about any of this. They've had it the entire time.
I don't want to hear about how the jury was misled. I just want to...
So when I have the pretrial interview with Troy Teske, if the court wants to know the reason that we didn't actually get the ammunition from him, is because I said, since he's out of state, and we'd have to get another law enforcement agency basically to go pick it up and take it and send it to us, I said, have him send me a picture of it so that I can determine whether it has any evidentiary value and I can speak to my case agent about it. The photograph that was sent to me is the photograph in the middle. That is not the same ammunition. You can tell from looking at it. It has a different projectile shape. That's not the same projectile shape. That's not the same casing. This isn't a Starline brass casing. And it also has brass primers and not silver primers. So I agreed with Detective Hancock, this has no evidentiary value. We're not going to continue to go down this rabbit hole. I want the court to know that the photographs that I spoke to Detective Hancock about yesterday where it does appear that Ms. Gutierrez has the live ammunition in her own hand that was taken a little more than a month after Ms. Hutchins died, those are on the right. So you can see the bottom photo, you can see the Starline brass casing, you can see the nickel primer, and then when you look up here, you can see the shape of the projectile. It's a spot-on match for the live rounds. There is absolutely nothing about the ammunition that Troy Teske had that has any evidentiary value in the Gutierrez case. It has no evidentiary value in the Baldwin case. This feels like asking us to go to every sporting goods store, collect all of their 45 caliber ammunition, and send it off for testing. We're not required to do that. It simply doesn't have any evidentiary value, and the defense was aware of it. if the court, let me check my notes real quick. And another thing that's really important about the transcript of Mr. Teske's pretrial interview is he does not say, this is the same ammunition that killed Helena Hutchins. He says, that's what Seth Kenny told me. Well, we've interviewed Seth Kenny countless times, and he's testified before Your Honor, and that is not what he says. He does not support that. So Mr. Teske indicated during his pretrial interview that he had no personal knowledge of whether or not this ammunition had anything to do with what was happening on the set of Rust. That all came from Seth. We investigated Seth. We talked to Seth. The only way that this has, on the best of days, for this to be relevant information for even Ms. Gutierrez, it's not at all relevant to Mr. Baldwin, but even for Ms. Gutierrez, it has to actually have some exculpatory value. And you can tell from the pictures on the right, it doesn't. It doesn't have any exculpatory value. And I want the court to keep in mind, Hannah Gutierrez, when she was working on the set of The Old Way in August, before she came to New Mexico to work on the set of Rust, she sent Seth Kinney a text message. And in that text message, she said, is it okay with you if I shoot live rounds out of the set guns? And Seth Kinney responded and said, no, don't do that. In fact, what he says is, it always ends in tears. It did this time. Hannah Gutierrez admits to law enforcement that she loaded the gun, she points out the box of dummy rounds that she was sourcing ammunition from. During her November interview, she holds up a picture of the exact same box and says, I got this from my dad. My dad wanted me to show you the boxes of dummy rounds that we use, and it was a spot-on match. She actually indicated that she got the box of dummy rounds from her own father. None of this is exculpatory at all. This is the exact same batch of ammunition that has already been sent to the FBI and tested because it all came from the same place. There's no reason for us to do it again. Thank you.
Your Honor, I don't know at this moment if the court is intending to take evidence or not, so...
She didn't call anybody.
Okay.
I can. If the court...
It is your presentation. I'm not going to tell you what to do on your presentation.
I'll do it then. We'll take evidence. If my offer of proof isn't enough, I'm happy to put witnesses up.
I just wanted to say one thing to the court, which is just simply that Ms. Morrissey, in her presentation, didn't say one word. Not one word.
Isn't this properly for Mr.
Well, I don't even say that. Well, he was making a legal argument. If we're going to do an evidentiary hearing, there won't be multiple lawyers involved. But so I would just simply point out that that there wasn't one word about what was actually turned in. I don't know if the court realizes that. That was all about stuff that happened that...
All right. This is... Thank you. All right. Go ahead, Mr. Nikas.
I'll be very brief, Your Honor. If this evidence wasn't as important as we say it is, they would have turned it over. The fact that they concealed it, the fact that they put it under a separate document number, didn't disclose the supplemental report, didn't disclose the bullets, didn't bring them to the April 6th evidentiary viewing, if it was that irrelevant, it had no evidentiary value, it would have been there, Your Honor, number one. Number two, Ms. Morrissey does not get to determine what has evidentiary value and what doesn't. 5501 says it's required to be disclosed, period, full stop. And in fact, in the Allison case, it was not exculpatory. It was inculpatory. It was the defendant's own arrest record and his own lies to the state. And yet the fact that it was required to be disclosed under 5501 and the fact that it was not meant, period, full stop, we're not going to have a mini trial about this in the middle of the trial. That's exactly what the Supreme Court reversed the lower court for doing, what Ms. Morris-Mori is asking you to do. It didn't matter. It was inculpatory. But the trial would have been conducted differently. And because it would have been conducted differently, and that's exactly the truth here, this goes to credibility, it goes to the government's bias, improper motivation and incompetence. I'm taking those exact words from the motion in limine ruling that Your Honor made. That goes into evidence. It's relevant to Popple's credibility, to Hancock's credibility. It relates to every single thing we've planned in this entire case, Your Honor. And right in the middle of it, Ms. Morrissey doesn't tell you what was actually turned in. She shows you a picture from 2021, a subset of the rounds that were turned in by Teske, a subset. He said he shot a bunch of rounds in those 2 years. The picture was only of four. This is critical evidence, Your Honor. And whether Seth Kenney is right or wrong, or how we debate whether he was involved or not involved, that's completely irrelevant. Because what we know is we don't have those bullets, and they were required to be disclosed so we could put on the case that's fair. And that's exactly what Brady says, Your Honor. Brady says that the administration of justice requires fairness. That was the entire premise of the decision. Fairness. And that's all we've wanted from the beginning, Your Honor. And you've given them chance after chance after chance, and there are no more chances, Your Honor. Brady says it. Giglio says it. 5501 requires it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Before I, and we can take testimony later if you all want, but I'm going to require that the state, in fact, I'm going to order that the state by 11:30 this morning produce the supplemental report, the file itself, and anything in it, and also the rounds.
May I respond?
Not finished.
Okay.
And the rounds that Ms. Popple took from Mr. Teske.
I want the court to understand that last night the defense reached out to Ms. Popple and said, "We want you to bring the rounds to court tomorrow." And she got their message, and then they reached out to her again and said, "No, never mind. We don't want you to bring the rounds
Thank
to court
you, Ms.
tomorrow."
Morrissey. Thank you, Ms. Morrissey.
I have them.
I don't. Okay, where are they?
They're here. They're. I'll go get
them. All right. Well, actually, I want testimony from Ms. Popple on how she retrieved those.
Sure.
So I don't need the box. Tell her. I need Popple.
I have tendered the supplemental report to the defense.
Please raise your right hand. Do you swear affirm under penalty of law that the testimony you'll give in this case will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Have a seat. Talking to the microphone. I would like to read the report. May I see the report?
Yes.
Where is this box of evidence?
In the other room.
I'd like to see it. Do you need to do it, Martine? I need the box of evidence. You all inspected this?
No, we have not yet.
Well, how do we want to do it? I want to look at it.
I do too.
Well, do you want me to ask the questions first? I have some questions of this witness.
You can ask first if I want to ask
the questions. Can I open this, Martine? Anywhere? Like, not in the middle. I mean, up at the top? Anywhere is fine. Maybe you need gloves too. Do you have gloves? Can you get some additional? So anywhere, I can just cut into it. Okay.
There should be a, there's a separate
all right.
area.
I'm going to have you, this is unusual, but if you all don't mind, and if there's any objection, I'm going to have her step down. And when I ask her a question about which is which, she will put it out. Is that all right with everybody?
However you want to do it.
Okay, sure. So I just need you to have some gloves. And we're going to go right there. And you all can approach too, so you don't have to... I don't want you asking questions yet, but I do... Can you move that thing? All right, please pull out the three Starline brass 45 colt. Just put the colt. Do you need a recording? You have your recording.
I have
your
recording. You have that pair of scissors.
Let's do the two DHA 45 bolts of silver blue and colored carbon. Those are the two BHA 45 colt with silver and colored primer.
Yes, Judge.
One CBC 45 colt with brass and colored primer.
That would be this one.
All right. 3 EHA 45 quote with brass and color primer. One Winchester 45 Colt. I don't know if you need the Winchester.
That one?
Two Winchester 45 Colt.
It's silver primer. With brass primer, silver casing.
Okay, got that. Okay, one SIG 45 Colt. All right, and then 10 Starline brass 45 Colt. All right, so do we have the microphone close by? Or can you pick up? Can you pick this up? Are you picking it up?
We've got one here.
All right, so point out to me, let me ask you this. Did Ziegler test, Ziegler tested the rounds in the Hannah Gutierrez case, correct?
Yes.
He didn't test any further rounds after the Hannah Gutierrez case?
No.
Okay, in the Hannah Gutierrez case, can you point out what types he did test from here?
I'm uncertain what types he tested.
This is a witness testifying, Ms. Morrissey. Please stop.
We sent all of the...
All right, let me ask it a different way. Do you recognize any of these types of bullets to have been gathered on the Hannah Gutierrez, on the rust set?
The Starline brass with silver primer are similar to what was collected on set.
And everything that was collected on set went to Ziegler?
Yes.
All right, thank you. I don't have any further questions, but I'll certainly allow some questions. I don't know if you want to be there with her or what.
If she could take the witness chair.
Good morning again. I'm just going to pass the witness up because we're not fully set up. The copy of the spent shell casing that was recovered on the scene at Ruff. And you would agree with me, right, that it's the same as the bottom of the bullets that you just provided to the court?
Yes, it's Starline brass 45 Colt with a silver primer.
So when I asked you yesterday, didn't he turn in ammunition that matched the ammunition that killed Ms. Hutchins? It's true that he did, correct?
And I did not recall at that time.
I understand that that's your position, but that's what in fact happened. Would you agree?
I would not use the word match without there being an additional analysis.
Well, who got to decide whether there would be additional analysis?
That was not myself.
It wasn't the defense, though, right? We didn't know about it.
I don't know what you were aware of.
Okay. Well, you know that we came to have an evidence viewing where we asked to see every single round that could be related to the rust set, and this was hidden from us. You do know that.
This was not hidden.
This was not hidden?
This was under a case number. It was documented. I was instructed to document it under this case number.
Okay, so in this case that's under the rust investigation case number, you would agree with me there's hundreds of things that you inventoried, right?
Yes.
There are hundreds of police reports that all relate to the same case number, right?
Yes.
The one thing that seems to have been put under a different case number is just this one discovery of the actual ammunition that matches the ammunition from the set of rust.
This was put under a doc information of someone coming in claiming to have rounds that were not utilized in a case.
Okay, well, let's examine that for a second. When Seth Kenny comes into the precinct and he gives you ammunition, you vouchered it, right?
I was instructed to collect the ammunition from Seth Kenny.
Well, let me take a step back for a second just to make something clear. Investigator Popple, you're following orders, right, when you're doing these things, correct?
Can you please stop referring to me as investigator because it's creating a misnomer?
Okay, well, how would you, I apologize.
I'm a crime scene technician. I'm not an investigator.
Okay, I'm only doing that because it's shorter than crime scene technician.
CST works.
Perfect, okay. CST Popple. When you took the, you're effectively following orders when you're deciding whether to voucher this or voucher the Seth Kenny evidence, right?
You keep using the word voucher, and I'm not sure what context you're using it.
Yeah, I apologize for that word choice. When you inventory and make a report, I think your testimony is you're doing it at the direction of supervisors. Is that fair?
Most of the time, yes.
Okay. So when Seth Kenny walks into the precinct and gives you ammunition and says it's from the Rust case, you all inventoried it, right?
Yes.
You took photos of it, right?
Yes.
You put it under the Rust case number, right?
Yes.
You turned it over to the defense, right?
According to my knowledge, yes.
Okay. Somebody else comes in to the precinct, okay? A man named Troy Teske, right?
Yes.
Who was a former police officer, right?
I believe he stated that, yes.
Okay. And I assume you all have the diligence to be able to confirm that, right?
I do not know if it was confirmed or not.
Okay. And he comes in and he also tells you he has evidence, right?
He told us 3 years later, after a trial, that he had evidence that the defense wanted him to use that he no longer wanted to hold on to.
Okay, let's break that down for a second, right? Mr. Teske isn't involved in your meetings with the prosecutors and Corporal Hancock's meetings with the prosecutors up until the trial, was it?
Not that I know of.
Okay, so doesn't it make sense that he would have seen the trial on television, been completely outraged at what he was watching, not trusted law enforcement, and then walked it into the precinct? Doesn't that make sense?
I do not know what would make sense to Mr. Teske.
Okay, didn't he in fact tell you, I don't trust Ms. Morrissey and the prosecutors?
He did not state that to me.
He didn't on your oath? You're sure about that?
I do not recall him stating that.
So he turns this round in, and you, when he turns it in, obviously recognize it as Starline Brass Nickel Primer Colt 45, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not as if he came in and just turned in a bunch of shells, right?
He did turn in a whole bunch of shells.
Okay, but he didn't just turn in shells, right?
He turned in multiple different 45 rounds.
I'll ask the question a third time. He didn't just turn in shells, did he?
He turned in multiple 45 rounds.
Including rounds that matched the round that struck Ms. Hutchins, right?
Again, I wouldn't use the word match without further analysis.
And the reason that we don't have further analysis is you all didn't send this to the FBI for further analysis, did you?
We did not.
Right? Because if you had, it would have potentially proven the fact that all along, this ammunition did come from Seth Kenny. Isn't that true?
What I was informed of by Mr. Teske was that the ammunition originated from Joe Swanson.
And then went in the green ammo can to Seth Kenny.
I do not recall him speaking about a green ammo can.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. You know, the other thing that you're saying, I took you at first to be saying, well, it's just a bunch of ammunition, and now we've gotten to the point where it's actually the same type of ammunition. And then you've also stated in your testimony that it's like, well, there's just this guy, Troy Teske, that just walks into the office like it's random. When really, Mr. Teske and his involvement in this case was very well known to law enforcement, correct?
I had never heard his name before.
Okay, but he came in and he said, I'm here to give evidence about the Rust case, right?
He stated that he had evidence the defense had wanted, and he no longer wanted to hang on to it.
Well,
and he was the one using the word evidence.
Okay. You said to him when you met him down at the first floor of the precinct, you were called because you were the evidence, the person in charge of the evidence, the CST, right?
Yes.
Okay. And he said, thank goodness it's you. You're the perfect person to take this because you know all about the Rust case. And you said, I know all about the Rust case, right?
I don't recall that.
Do you deny that?
No.
Okay. And then he said to you, this ammunition was in Seth Kenny's possession, and you said Seth Kenny's law enforcement is well aware of Mr. Kenny, right?
I don't recall that.
So you take this ammunition on March 6th, right?
Yes.
The standard operating procedure for the Santa Fe Police Department says you're supposed to make your report within 24 hours, right?
Correct.
Okay, so tell the court, did you make the report within 24 hours?
I'm fairly certain that our SOP is that evidence should be submitted within 24 hours. I'm not certain on when the reports are supposed to be submitted.
So do you want to take your answer back that
yes,
you gave
I
a minute
do.
Ago?
Yes, I do. I apologize. Yes.
Well, we can enter that SOP into evidence. In this case, many times, there are police reports that are done the same day that the incident occurs. Can you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. How much longer after this revelation did you do your report?
I believe it was... I apologize. I can refer to my report to refresh my memory. Oh, I have a copy. I believe it was the following month that the report was made.
Yeah, it was approximately a month later, right?
Yes.
Okay. What happened during that month? CSD pop.
To be fairly honest, I went out of town to visit my dying mother.
Okay. I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry to hear that. Were you out of town that entire month?
I don't believe it was the entire month, no.
Okay. Who was involved in the word choice in this report?
Myself.
You didn't have any input? Because this doesn't look like the same language you use in the other reports.
Well, on a normal basis, I don't have conversations with people involved in cases.
Uh-huh. But there was also other officers there that were aware of this. Corporal Hancock was aware of this, correct?
She was notified about it, yes.
Okay, and so was your supervisor who was there with you, correct?
Yes.
So you're not telling me and this court that you had no input at all in the drafting of this document, are you?
It was reviewed by my supervisor. I don't believe any corrections were made to it or requested by him.
You know, it's just, there's a funny sentence in it. It says, it's a sentence I've never seen in a police report. You tell me if you've ever seen this in a police report in your entire career. It says, it should be noted that this is not actual evidence from the death investigation collected by SFSO detectives.
You are not reading my section of the report. You're reading what was written by Lieutenant Brian Brandle.
Ah, I was going to say, it doesn't look like you're writing. So the lieutenant writes in, thank you for clarifying that. I just got this report, as you know, right? The lieutenant writes in, it should be noted that this is not actual evidence from the death investigation collected by SFSO detectives. Did I read that right?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. In your career, going back to when you were at CST in Florida, all the way through the present, have you ever seen such a sentence in a police report in your entire career?
Not that exact sentence, no.
Yeah, me neither. So you're, if you could just look at this report for a second and help clarify for me which parts of this you filled out versus the lieutenant?
The section that starts at the top with my name.
Well, let's just go page by page.
That would be page 5.
After this occurred, did this cause you concern, CSD Popple, that this was handled this way?
It did not.
And as I asked you yesterday, you actually said when you were meeting with Mr. Teske, this is the ammunition that we've been looking for from the Rust set, didn't you?
I don't recall stating that.
But you're not denying that?
I'm not denying that.
So I don't know whether the most critical evidence in this case is the gun that was sent off to be destroyed or the round that killed Ms. Hutchins. It probably is the round that killed Ms. Hutchins. Would you agree with that those are probably the two most important pieces of evidence in this entire case?
I'm sorry, can you please restate your long question?
Sure. Would you agree with me that the two most critical items in this case from an evidentiary perspective were probably the firearm in question and the live ammunition that struck Ms. Hutchins, right?
I would say the firearm and the live ammunition from the set.
Okay. And so the firearm, which we've had hearings, discussions about, was ultimately broken beyond repair by law enforcement, right?
Was broken by the FBI lab. Yes.
Okay. And the report that was issued by the experts for the prosecution about that firearm and whether or not it had been modified before was buried also by the prosecutors, correct?
I do not know about that report.
Okay. And then we can turn to this second most critical piece of evidence in this case. And this was also buried by law enforcement, correct?
No.
No, it wasn't. Okay. Were you in the precinct when the evidence viewing occurred with the defense? I think you said yesterday that your partner or your colleague dealt with the evidence viewing.
Yes, my colleague and Detective Hancock, I believe, were there.
But you didn't, nobody asked you to take this voucher sealed evidence out and show it to the defense, correct?
When the request was made, I believe they couldn't quite narrow down everything that they wanted to view. There was quite a bit.
Oh, so this was a narrowing down issue? The reason that this wasn't shown to the defense is a narrowing down issue?
No, I'm stating that they couldn't quite tell me in detail what they wanted to see.
The request from the defense of all ammunition was taken by law enforcement to not mean the ammunition that you recovered that matched the ammunition that struck Ms. Hutchins?
I don't believe they looked at all the ammunition that day.
Well, no, but the request was all ammunition. So I'm asking you, did law enforcement interpret that request to not include this critical evidence?
All of the items that were pulled for the case were under the rust case number.
Which was a perfect plan.
You're asking me if there was a plan?
Well, I'm saying whether there was or there wasn't, it worked out pretty well, right?
I'm not sure what you're getting at. There was a request to view the evidence from rust. That is the evidence that was pulled.
Well, your report says this is evidence from rust, and then it just puts it under a different case number, and the lieutenant then writes that sentence in saying this isn't evidence from rust, right?
My report states that Mr. Teske believed that it was related to rust, and then I listed the case number next to that.
Do you remember when we start? Well, do you remember when we started my examination of you yesterday? How I sort of said to you, the way you know what evidence to find is by what people tell you. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And that when you're at a burglary and somebody says, oh, you better pick up that glove, you don't know that that person's telling the truth or not, but you pick up the glove, right?
Depending on the circumstances of the case, possibly.
And here, a retired member of law enforcement walks into the precinct, who's known to law enforcement, who turns in the matching ammunition, who tells you it's involved in the case, where there's tons of corroboration, both by what he provides and the history that law enforcement knows about this man. And you put it under a different case number, right?
I'm sorry, what was your question in that long statement?
You put it under a different case number.
Yes, as I was instructed to do so.
Finish up so that Ms. Morrissey can cross-examine.
Yeah, I'm trying to review this in real time. So I will pass the witness in a moment. 1 second, Ruth. Oh, and I asked you this yesterday, but I want to ask again, which is you told Mr. Teske that you would write up a report because of how important this was the very same day, didn't you?
I don't recall stating the very same day.
You don't deny that, though, do you?
I don't deny it, but I don't recall it.
Okay, nothing further. For the record, that was State's Exhibit 29, I showed the witness.
All right, are we going to admit the supplemental into evidence?
Please.
Well, somebody move it in. I started the conversation.
Is it a court exhibit or just Marcus defense?
I think it's, well, since I started it, are you okay with court's exhibit?
That's fine with me. And I think it gets confused.
However you want to handle it.
All right, court's exhibit what?
Come back.
All right, thank you. And it is, any objection?
No. Certainly not.
Go ahead.
If I can just pause for a moment and just address the court. Here's what I'm intending to do. Obviously, this is a serious dispositive matter. A full record needs to be laid. I have Mr. Kinney on his way over. He'll be here any minute. We intend to take testimony from him. I also intend to take testimony from Mr. Bowles.
Here's what we're gonna
Judge, I have to make a record, though.
Well, just a minute.
Okay.
The issue is the disclosure, okay?
I understand.
All right, so.
That's why I want to call these people, is it goes to the heart of the disclosure. So all I'm asking the court for.
Well, we don't have time for this. So what I'm going to do, for example, like with Hancock, I'm going to have her get up on the stand and continue testifying about the case, and then this portion, just like you did with Popple yesterday, we will ask. You can call, move Seth Kenny up, you can move Seth Kenny up, but he's going to do all of his testimony if you're going to do that.
So here's the only thing I'm trying to do, and I don't mean to be frustrating. The only thing I'm trying to do is make sure that if this court grants this motion to dismiss, that I have made a full record. And I am entitled to do that. So I am getting my witnesses over here so that I can make a full record on this issue.
Well, what's interesting to me, to be quite honest, is that yesterday you didn't even want to do a written reply. you wanted to just give an oral response.
I never saw these. I've never seen these, and I never saw the report. I have absolutely never seen these until this morning.
All right.
I've never seen the report until this morning.
So ask questions of this witness, and then you can line up your witnesses, and I'll see. But we're going to go with Hancock after this.
Ms. Popple, I just presented to the court that I've never seen these until this morning. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
You've never shown me these, or I've never come in to see them. Is that right?
Correct.
Have you ever provided me that doc report?
No, I have not.
Okay. So, do you know who Troy Teske is?
No, I do not.
I think we took some testimony from you yesterday that he is the friend of Thel Reed.
I believe that was stated, but I did not know that information.
Okay, so let me ask it this way. If Troy Teske, who provided this ammunition, is a friend of Hannah Gutierrez's dad, and if these bullets...
I'd ask the prosecutor not to be touching those with her bare hands.
They rolled around for 3 years. Okay. If these bullets match the ones that were on the set of Rust, is that evidence, additional evidence, that Hannah Gutierrez provided the live ammunition to the set of Rust?
Yes.
And has she been convicted for that?
Yes.
Is this evidence that Seth Kinney provided live ammunition to the set of Rust?
No.
So let me ask you, Ms. Popple, if you buried it, how did the defense attorneys know to cross-examine you on it yesterday?
I do not know.
Do you have any idea when the defense attorneys learned about this ammunition?
No, I do not.
Do you know who they learned it from?
No.
Those are some important inquiries. Those are all the questions I have for Ms. Popple, but we'd like to take additional testimony.
All right. I thought I had one more question.
Oh, and I'm sorry. Would it refresh your memory about whether or not you're supposed to write a report within 24 hours if you...
I don't think that was in dispute. I think he...
All right.
Right? Never mind. Okay. So you're off the witness stand. We're going to... Do we want to leave these out or do we want to gather them up?
I think they need to be vouchered and kept, obviously.
Well, okay. Well, so it'll be Court's Exhibit... 12? Is that how you want to do it?
Yes, I think it should be a court exhibit since this is a hearing, yes.
Okay, Court's 12. And my only question is, do you want them back in the... do you plan to examine anybody with these?
They have to be at the courthouse if we can, yes. All
right. Well, she divided them all up is my only point. So is she going to keep coming back and dividing them up, or what are we going to do?
I think yesterday there was some testimony that I think was frankly just misleading, that none of the...
No, this is my question.
Yes.
You all, okay. What do you want to do with that? Because if you're asking a witness, then we're going to have to pile them out of there, and somebody's going to have to line them up and identify what's this, okay? So do you want them staying out like this, or do you want them in the bag? That's all. That's my question for the day.
I think they should remain vouchered, and they are open like any voucher would be at a trial, when and if a witness is questioned about them.
Okay, so here's my question. If I put them back in the bag, they're all going to be commingled, and you may not recognize them, so you can cross-examine appropriately or examine appropriately, okay? You're lay people. You have knowledge. I don't need to go into it. That's my only question. Want it in the bag, or do you want it out?
So what I would ask is, let us quickly just photograph it, and then we'll ask CST Popple to put it back, but remain at the courthouse. That's what I would ask.
All right. Is that okay?
Absolutely. My question for the court is, are we going to complete this motion hearing?
No, we're not going to complete it yet. Okay, I'm going to...
Can you just give us an idea so that we can be prepared for how you intend to proceed with regard to the motion hearing?
I'm going to have Hancock come up. You're going to call Seth Kinney, and I would like... I don't know why we can't do Seth Kenny's testimony if he's coming. Did you call him as a witness?
Sure, he's being called as a witness.
Okay, well, you should be prepared to call him. So we're going to do both, and I'm going to hear both.
So we're going to hear from these witnesses outside the presence of the jury and then in front of the jury?
Oh, you're right about that. Thank you.
That's my issue.
Thank you for pointing that out. Other than telling the jury to leave for the and come back at 3, which I'm not going to do to them, I'm going to continue the testimony, and you said, actually, I'm thinking, why can't the jury hear this? Heard Popple.
I'm sorry?
They heard Popple.
Oh, absolutely. No, I'm not making a comment on whether or not the defense gets to bring this in front of the jury. I'm making a commentary on the jury doesn't hear our motion hearing, and I just want to complete
they're not
the going to
hear.
Hearing.
Okay, I'm going to take evidence from each of these folks. Is this a problem? So I don't know what I'm going to do yet, so this is why I want to do it this way, okay? I want Hancock on the stand. You can question her about this issue, okay? Seth Kenny comes. You're going to do all of his testimony, including this, okay? Bowles is separate. He wasn't going to be testifying, okay? And on Bowles' testimony, the jury will leave, okay? And anything further on this motion, the jury will leave. But I think that they can do Hancock and Kenny in front of the jury.
Can Mr. Spiro and I approach?
Sure.
There's more to come in the Rust shooting trial against Alec Baldwin from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Press subscribe now.